From NPR News in Washington, I'm Barbara Klein. A series of bombings and shootings in Iraq today has killed at least 57 people and injured hundreds, mostly in and around Baghdad. From the Iraqi capital, the BBC's Haddad Salih reports police say the bombings were coordinated.
The car bombs were parked in alleys near restaurants and cafes to cause as many casualties as possible. Families were out celebrating the third day of the Eid al-Fitr holiday, marking the end of the holy month of Ramadan. At least 8 districts were hit, most of them Shia. To the north of the capital in Tuz Hurmato, a suicide bomber blew up a car bomb near a police checkpoint. Blame has fallen on Al-Qaeda and the Sunni minority, especially supporters of Saddam Hussein's Ba'ath Party. But many Iraqis suspect foreign agents are trying to provoke a resumption of sectarian strife.
The BBC's Haddad Salih in Baghdad. Another sign today that Syria's civil war could further expand beyond its borders. The president of Iraqi Kurdistan says he'll defend Kurds living in Syria if they're threatened by al-Qaeda-linked opposition fighters. Masoud Barzani posted a letter online today saying he's sending representatives to Syria to investigate reports that al-Qaeda terrorists are attacking Kurdish civilians. In Northern Ireland last night, at least 56 police officers were injured during rioting in Belfast. Protestants were trying to stop Catholics from holding their annual parade that marks the British government's 1971 internment of IRA members without a trial. Larry Miller reports police were injured trying to stop the clashes.
Police came under sustained attack from Protestant loyalists blocking the parade route through the center of Belfast. Officers were hit with bottles, rocks, and fireworks and responded with rubber bullets and water cannon. Belfast police chief describes the rioting as mindless anarchy and sheer thuggery. Speaking to Sky News, Northern Ireland Secretary Teresa Villiers calls the rioting shameful.
If people rioting on the streets think that they're defending a cause or defending Britishness, then they are completely mistaken.
Despite a 1998 power-sharing deal between Protestants and Catholics, Northern Ireland remains deeply divided. With more parades planned by both sides, Belfast is bracing for more violence. For NPR News, I'm Larry Miller in London.
The top commander of the U.S.-led coalition in Afghanistan says a stalled security agreement between the U.S. and Afghanistan needs to be signed. In an Associated Press interview today, General Joseph Dunford said it's important for the coalition to demonstrate to Afghans and the Taliban that the international community is committed to Afghanistan's future. Dunford said Afghan forces will be able to fight the Taliban, but they'll need more training when foreign combat troops leave. This is NPR. Hundreds of police are combing a large wilderness area in Idaho for a missing 16-year-old girl and her suspected kidnapper. James DiMaggio allegedly abducted Hannah Anderson in California after killing her mother and brother. California officials say the silver fire in the San Jacinto Mountains is now almost half contained after spreading to nearly 30 square miles. 27 structures are destroyed, most of them residences. In Colorado, one man is dead and police are searching for 3 other people who are missing after a flash flood swept across a mountain highway Friday evening. Colorado Public Radio's Ben Marcus reports.
The flash flooding hit the small town of Manitou Springs, triggered by heavy rains near the burn scar of last year's destructive Waldo Canyon fire. Manitou Springs Police Chief Joe Ribeiro says Friday's floods and mudslides also caused a lot of property damage.
We can say that some folks have lost their homes. There's been some total destruction on a few homes and some significant damage to the others.
The town west of Colorado Springs has been plagued by floods after the Waldo Canyon fire wiped out vegetation on nearby hillsides. The National Weather Service has issued a flash flood watch for the area through this evening. For NPR News, I'm Ben Marcus in Denver.
Showers of a very different kind this weekend as the Perseid meteor shower reaches its peak. Astronomers say the best time to watch for streaks across the sky is after midnight, as many as 100 of them an hour. Perseid is an annual event occurring as Earth plows through debris left behind by a comet. The particles burn up as they enter our atmosphere, and the sky fills with what look like shooting stars. I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Walton Family Foundation, whose K-12 initiative works to empower families with quality school choices. WaltonK12.org.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.
Y'all, Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. Welcome to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, the best cultural show on radio. We thank you so much for being a part of this great day with us. I want to begin by welcoming Michelle Yark, our executive producer. Michelle, look, the coffee pot just arrived.
I see that. Well, you had a cup of coffee already, but John doesn't sit down with a cup of coffee. John sits down with a pot of coffee several times a day.
If Louisianians spoke about coffee in cups, we would not be known for the coffee-drinking society we are.
Society.
Coffee, that's right. Coffee is a way of life here in Cajun country. So, yeah, you know what I mean.
So it's kind of like...
Yeah, you greenhorns only drink 10 or 12 cups a day mean nothing to us. Anyway, across the glass wall, y'all, Dean Slime, our engineer. Bar the music has been great. I tell you what, things are really wonderful in there. You ever got any of that machinery working in there? We got about a spare of everything in there, including a tire. We just put a spare tire where the sulfur is over there.
Yeah, it's a museum in here for sure. And we're going to start leasing out equipment. So.
Well, of course we are. That's it. Did you hear when I cranked up the tractor this morning?
I did.
Yeah, you see my tractor's right across that wall right there. And that's pretty good, huh? Anyway, how you doing today, girl?
I'm good.
What you been up to?
Well, you know, I was doing a little shopping. You know, I've got a couple of book needs. But I thought this was kind of fun.
Yeah.
While I was browsing through the shelves, it came up with this little book, Blue Plate Special.
Yeah, I see that. Blue
Isn't
plate
that cute? Time.
Yeah, that's a nice little book.
It made me think of today's plate lunches.
Oh, man, I love plate lunches.
I know.
And you know you can't find them. How many times a week I gripe about not being able to find a good plate lunch?
Do I have to count? But it's true. Just the other day you were saying, you know, it's lunchtime. Where do you want to go to lunch? What do you want for lunch? Well, I don't know. No, I don't want that. I don't want that. Why can't you just get a good plate of white beans?
Well, what about the Mexican restaurant? I say, no, I'm tired of Mexican. Well, why you got the good Lebanese? I don't want Lebanese. I want turkey wings. Excuse me for being so passionate about it. But talking about that, look, you see what I have in my hand? Louisiana Kitchen Culture Magazine came out, and it's interesting that you mentioned that because they also have an article, a great article right here by Chris J., A Plate Lunch Pilgrimage Through Northwestern Louisiana.
I think this is a great article. I ran across that,
you saw that?
As
look,
well.
Look,
I
look was at this fried chicken and macaroni.
It is a beautiful article, and it's so timely because we do think of, they've got the Blue Light Cafe in there.
I see it right here in Ruston. Yeah, and I remember when I used to go eat at, what's her name? She had that wonderful restaurant there. I'll remember her name in a minute.
There's Sherry's Diner in Shreveport. Neck bone plates are available every Tuesday.
Oh, look, I know Sherry's Diner. I know. And LBK is? LBK is over in Farmerville. Most people don't know about that.
I was looking at this. Barbecue, they said they have, you know, because most little blue plate diners aren't that large. This one has 120 seats and 20 more picnic tables in the back.
That means they're good. Look, well, I went to Menden because in Menden there's an old Germantown settlement over there, a wonderful old Germantown settlement, and Moody's Cafe is over there, and they talk about Moody's Heavenly Cornbread. Anyway.
Oh, but wait, did you see? I loved this because they asked the owner about her macaroni and cheese recipe, which is made with sour cream, pimentos, and crushed red pepper.
Wow.
Ernestine Moody, they asked her about it, and she cited unexpected inspiration. She said Jesus Christ was her inspiration. I believe in a supreme being. And you know, that's got to be a supreme mac and cheese.
But anyway, talking about Blue Plate Specials, wow, does that, you know, that goes way back before the Depression. It was a term that was used by restaurants for a lower price meal. In other words, you weren't going to get a big T-bone steak with a baked potato. I mean, these, you know, if you were hungry and didn't have a lot of money, like pretty much everybody in those days, you'd go into a diner or a lunch counter and ask for the Blue Plate Special, and you'd get, all the time, you get a hearty meal of a single meat and three vegetables. That's why people say, you know, these diners are a meat plus three. A meat plus three. They say a meat plus three. That's where that term comes from. And it was always served in a divided plate.
And
you remember those?
I do remember the divided plates. They were actually blue.
They were manufactured
during the Depression.
That's how they called blue plates.
The plates with the separate sections. But you know what? My mama had one of those. She had I think there was only one, and my cousins and I would fight over that plate because it had the divided sections. I wonder what happened to that plate. This one was yellow.
Slama. You're not going to realize this, but the name Blue Plate goes back even further than Michelle is talking about in the Depression. The late 1890s actually was where I was able to trace it back, when people began moving west by rail. That's when it all happened. The train rides into relatively uncharted territories, you can imagine they were long, food was scarce, or in many cases non-existent. And one man by the name of Fred Harvey, and I know a lot of restaurateurs are going to say, Harvey's. I know exactly what that. Fred Harvey had the idea of not only making food available to the passengers on the train, but good food served in an interesting setting. His menus featured all of these great things that you wouldn't expect in that era. He had grilled steaks. He had great veal cutlets that were kind of panned or pounded out. He had salad breads, cheeses, even ice creams and cake and wine was served on trains. And the most important thing, and the thing that gave Fred Harvey's operation real notoriety, were the Harvey girls. These were a beautiful group of young women, professionally uniformed. They were trained in sophisticated dining. I remember this on trains, right?
1890.
Yeah, in 1890. By the way, a movie was made about them, too, the Harvey girls. You ought to look it up. It's very interesting. And through food, they brought a touch of civility and sophistication to what otherwise was the wild, wild west. And, of course, it all happened on trains. And the Harvey girls and the Harvey diners became really, really important back then.
And, you know, Harvey's restaurants and train stations.
That's right. It moved to stations.
That's right. Topeka, Santa Fe train lines.
There was a song about that, by the way.
Well, they all featured plate lunches.
At Jason, Topeka and Santa Fe. I could keep going. That was a World War II song. Good.
Well, anyway, passengers that had just a short period of time between trains could get a full meal, a meat and two or three sides on beautiful blue Wedgwood plates.
It all comes to light right now.
The blue plate special. You know, we should think about that as an entrepreneur. There should be a blue plate special in airports because you get tired of the fast food.
That could be a great name, too. And make sure you don't say anything in public because somebody might steal our name.
That's right. There are kind of days when I feel like, you know, a passenger on a fast-moving train. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, you're just constantly, and you get tired of the fast food.
No, burger and fries.
I mean, nothing wrong with a good burger and fries. Don't get me wrong. But you don't want it every day. Sometimes you just need good home cooking and comfort food.
Well, and I am happy to report that even in this age of fast food and all those other ethnic restaurants, which is so great to have given us this wonderful diversity in eating, you can still find a good blue plate. And let me tell you, that shouldn't surprise our listeners either. After all, this is Louisiana, and there may be some folks out there that are still searching for such a place. And I'm going to tell you what, I have some recommendations. Good thing they tuned into the big show today. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing about blue plate specials, they differ daily. That's one of the main differences. Every day there's a different one, but you're always guaranteed something delicious. In fact, right around here, right around our office down the airline here, Frank's has been serving that delicious fried chicken steak and biscuits with gravy since 1964. And they're right there in Prairieville, and they even have a Baton Rouge location.
Well, and the other day we had meetings at Nichols State, and on the way back, it was lunchtime, we were starving, of course we're always hungry, Napoleonville, because our friend Andrew Capone was telling us different places,
and we
stopped, they had their little blue plate special, it was a Monday, so it was red beans and rice, but they had round steak, you know, Frank's, I got round steak at Frank's a couple of weeks ago.
I don't want to hear it.
I brought you some.
Yeah, but that should have warranted a phone call.
You got several.
What about the Table Is Bread over there?
I love the Table Is Bread. Great soul food, great fried chicken. Ooh. They're near the Baton Rouge Airport. There's also Tony's on Plank Road. They have lunch specials. So if on a Thursday you're looking for me, can't find me, you might go over to Tony's where I'll be having crab meat au gratin.
Yeah, right. And their plate lunches, of course, two vegetables and bread. So two and three. You know what I'm talking about?
There you go.
Well, you know, you hear us talk about the Boudin Trail, right? Well, have you traveled the Blue Plate Trail? I mean,
I think that would be a great.
We've coined the Blue Plate Trail because when people are in search of great blue plates, now you can follow the J&M's Blue Plate Trail. Put that on our website.
I'm writing it down.
Yeah. Well, in the towns of New Iberia, seriously, New Iberia, Lafayette, Eunice, the home of the unbelievable Cajun and Creole blue plate lunches. They're still around. Madonna Broussard runs Laura's 2 in Lafayette. Now, Madonna, third-generation restaurant owner. It was her grandmother's restaurant, Laura's. It was probably the first plate lunch establishment in the Lafayette area, and Madonna still serves some of her grandmother's dishes, like the spicy bacon, my favorite, turkey wings.
Turkey wings.
If you don't want gravy splashing in your face from my sucking of the bone,
I'm telling
you better get out of it. She also serves crispy pork chops with deep brown gravy over rice, always rice.
Well, and there's another great lunch spot in Lafayette, Creole Lunch House.
Oh, I love that, too.
This is Merlene Hebert's place. She has stewed chicken and sausage on Wednesdays, and, of course, rice is always
on the menu.
What about
T-Coons?
I knew you were going to say T-Coons.
What about T-Coons?
I knew you would love T-Coons. David Bio's plate lunches, true Cajun. And not necessarily typical, because he catches his own catfish for
Can you imagine going out and fishing before you cook lunch? That's what he does, and makes his coubillon out of it.
And Mondays, it's smothered rabbit. And that was on the menu of the other little blue plate special place in Napoleonville.
Emily's had catfish. Emily's had the smothered rabbit. And Ruby's, y'all, crawfish etouffee in Eunice on Fridays, unbelievable. She's up with the times, too. She posts her daily menu, by the way. On her Facebook site. And Michelle, when we're in New Orleans, when we're in New Orleans,
Little
you know where
Dizzy's,
we going?
Little Dizzy's Cafe on Esplanade, only
look,
one place.
That's like going to the Vatican for a Catholic. That's like going to the Vatican if you're Catholic. Little Dizzy's on Esplanade.
That fried chicken and famous bread pudding, you can't go wrong.
And what about their gumbo?
Delicious.
That chicken gumbo with that special New Orleans sausage. I can't ever say the name of it. I don't know the name of it. It's a special sausage they only get there. I don't know, some kind of sausage, but it is one. And it's in their gumbo, and there's absolutely nothing like it. Y'all, you don't want to go anywhere, because when we come back, we have a guest you don't want to miss. See you in a minute.
Waiting for your lunch break. Cloud built up, rain began to fall. Waiting for your lunch break. Drop the ground, I kiss the earth. Waiting for your lunch break to come around. Got in your time with me, but the world keeps breaking in, keep breaking in.
Glide through your weekday mornings at 11 a.m. here on the Medicine Ball Caravan. I'm Cecil Doyle. Mondays through Thursdays, we cruise through a fast-paced hour of sounds both old and new, as well as keeping you up to date with area music and arts. The Medicine Ball Caravan, 11 to noon weekdays here on KRVS.
If tune rhythms are about dance, song beats are usually about something more practical, the rhythms of work, lyrics taking a back seat to the purpose of lightening the load and keeping the singer on track. Get into the rhythm of the song on the Thistle and Shamrock.
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
This week on Encore, we'll be listening to interviews from former professional baseball players Terry Fox and Gene Bakke about their time spent with the Evangeline Baseball League. I hope you'll join me here on KRVS 88.7, Saturday at 7 a.m. and Sunday at 3 p.m.
¶¶ 99, she's the only one that'll sound that way on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
All aboard, she's on her way.
See the old smoke rising round the bend. I reckon that she knows she's gonna meet a friend. Folks around these parts get the time of day from the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
Here she comes.
Michelle, remember I told you they had a song by that? Remember I told you they had a song like that, huh? Hey, y'all, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. And today we're talking about Michelle and I's favorite subject, and that is
food.
Food. Well, certainly food, but places that serve those blue plate specials. And Michelle, we went through a whole bunch of them, and one of them that I missed, I am going to come back and tell you about because it's also one of my favorite. But right now we have a great guest on the
yes.
show. Good friend of mine. Why don't you go ahead and introduce her?
Yes, indeed. A good friend of yours from several years ago, Brenda Placide of Brenda's Diner in New Iberia. You know, she opened her restaurant on the advice of her mom. And going by the success she's had, it was pretty darn good advice from her mother. Her restaurant is mostly takeout, but she has about seating for about 25 folks every day, and she packs the customers in.
Yeah, you can't even get in the place.
I know. That's why they had to do takeout.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Brenda will tell you that she just loves to cook, and that shows through every dish that she creates, draws people there from all over the country, all over the world. Her menu features some of Louisiana's best-loved dishes. Red beans and rice.
Mustard greens.
Fried chicken. Mustard greens. That's my favorite. That is my
bread
favorite
pudding,
vegetable.
Bread pudding.
That's just a few, okay?
Chicken stew.
Oh, chicken stew.
We call it fricassee. But
well, she's here with us today to talk with us about her restaurant and her blue plate specials. Brenda, welcome to Stirring It Up. We know you're getting ready for a crowd today, but we're just so glad that you were able to take time to join us.
Brenda, you there with us, baby?
Yes, I am.
All right. Baby, Michelle was giving you that good introduction. I thought maybe you had fell asleep on me over there.
No, baby, I'm listening to what she's saying.
Baby, how you been? I hadn't seen you in so long.
You haven't seen her since you stole her chicken
stew. I didn't steal her chicken. We shared it. She shared
it. But I got this call. I have to inform y'all. I gave him my chicken stew recipe.
That's right, baby. How long ago that was, you figure?
That might have been about maybe 5-6 years ago.
I'm getting ready to say, and you remember, though, I didn't steal that recipe. I sent you a gift after. Remember that?
You sure did. A beautiful gift. And I love it. Still using it.
I sent you some knives, remember? You see that, Michelle? I didn't just take that recipe Brenda shared. I told Brenda that day that was the best chicken stew I ever tasted in my life. I said, I need the recipe. She said, I said, okay, but she gave it to me anyway. Brenda, you been?
I sure did.
Brenda, you how long you been open, baby, over there?
Well, I've been open right now for 23 years. Thanks to God and my mother. I opened up in
1991. I like the way she said thank to God and her mother, huh?
That's exactly right.
That's the two. Brenda, your restaurant is such a hit in that area. Now, you've enlisted the help of your daughter and grandson now, huh? They picking up those skills or what? They learning to cook?
Yes, indeed. And my son also helped him open up a restaurant in Arlington, Damon Cajun Soul Cafe.
And where is it?
In Arlington, around Dallas.
Oh, around Dallas in Texas.
Yes.
Oh, you know.
Damon Cajun Soul Cafe. He's doing great.
Oh, you know he's doing good, serving that good. Look, but it don't matter where you go to cook Cajun and Creole food, it's going to sell good.
That's right.
No matter what. Now, tell us, where did you learn to cook? I know you learned to cook at the hands of your mom, but tell us a little bit about that. You learned to cook early?
Well, John, let me tell you something. My mother had three girls, and I was second. And my mama always installed in me a cooking, cleaning up. And my mother was very hard on me, but I couldn't understand why. But you know what? That was tough love.
That was tough
love.
If
you ever heard of tough love, that's what she was showing me. And this is why one of the reasons I am able to stay in this diner 23 years, because of the tough love that she showed me.
But you're right. You know, all of us who grew up in the time that you and I grew up, we got good tough love because, you know what, our parents knew that the road was tough. They knew
that's
that.
Right. They
knew
that. They prepared us for the road.
They prepared us for the
future. Road.
And look, let me tell you something. You don't see much of that going on today.
And all my customers that come from all over, Miss Brenda, how you do it? I do all my cooking with one help. You know what I tell her? tough love. My mother showed me what tough love was about.
Brenda,
go ahead. I'm ready.
Brenda, how does your menu?
I love to talk now. Come on.
How does your menu work? Do you have the same dishes every day? Certain dishes on certain days of the week? Do you mix it up? How do you do it?
Okay, I have a daily menu, Michelle, and what I do is, because the customer come in certain days for certain meals.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do, I add to the meal. A customer might come in and say, well, Ms. Brenda, do you have any fresh sausages? I say, no, but next time you come, I will have your fresh sausages. So I add to my menu. I don't take away.
Oh, girl, let me tell you, you really messing with me now. You know how long it's been since I had some good smothered down sausage, fresh sausage.
All right. And you know something also, John? Smothered liver.
Oh, girl, that's
you talking
they love it. Straight from Mama's kitchen. All food that you can't buy all over the world.
You heard what Michelle just said when you said smothered down liver? Tell her, Michelle.
You're speaking his language. That's one of his favorite dishes, and you are right. You cannot get that anywhere. We know where to get it now.
Oh, we know
where. That's right.
So tell us your Monday through Friday a special on the menu. What you got on Monday? Red beans?
I have red beans. I have sweet peas. But let me give you my entree. On Mondays, I have chicken stew.
Chicken stew.
Meatball soup. Neck bone. Turkey neck. Sweet peas. Potato salad, green salad.
Oh.
The dessert, I have dessert every day, but it doesn't come with the meal.
Baby, you heard
now,
my four flavor dishes.
If you could remember, smothered turkey necks, meatball stew. I'm sure your mother cooked that for you.
Oh, meatball stew, you're right.
We call it pork bone, but today they call it neck bone.
Yeah, pork bone. That's just good neck bone stew that's smothered down. That's just good.
That's
pork,
right. And make sure you get the ones that have a lot of meat on it.
Pork, meat, and gravy on rice?
Yes, sir. And I do smothered potatoes. Some people don't like. Mm-hmm. Some people like rice. Some like smothered potato.
That's something
I add to my menu.
Let me ask you. You dice your tomatoes to smother or you slice?
I take my potatoes. I peel them. I dice them.
Dice them. There you go.
And
that's
what
I
do
like.
Is I put the seasoning in it with a little margarine, and let it simmer down. Then you come with your seasoning and you put on top of your seasoning. And, baby, that's the best potato there. I call it smothered potato.
I got a smile on my face listening to you, girl. What you got on Wednesday?
Okay. On Wednesday, I have baked chicken, pork roast, smothered pork chop, smothered okra, baked spaghetti, potato salad, green salad.
Lord.
And I bet that potato
Wednesday
salad
is something.
Wednesday
is my busiest day because of that okra. Not frozen okra you buy in the store, no, John. It's okra I take my time and cut with a machine out the garden.
You got some farmers around there, or you grow a lot of your own vegetables?
No. I buy it from different people. And by me being in business so long, I get the better deals. Sometimes I put up about 90 bushels of okra, maybe 100 bushels. I got a special freezer with just okra.
Oh.
So by me buying so much okra, after the season is over, you can't buy this okra. So you got to prepare.
Well, baby, you must be smothering down okra for like a month or 2 months at a time.
I sure do. Every Monday and Wednesday, I put up 4 bushels of okra. I have a machine that cut it.
4 bushels. Oh, my God. Now, so that's on where? Oh, I love Michelle. She mentioned meatball stew.
That's Monday.
Listen to this. She mentioned pork neck bones with a lot of meat on the neck bones. She mentioned pork roast, pork chops, smothered turkey wings, turkey necks. That's my favorite. Liver.
We just to Wednesday.
Baby, tell me about Thursday.
Okay, now let me tell you something up. I'm giving you all my recipes. You see your turkey. Do you do turkey wings?
Baby, I do turkey wings. Are you kidding me? When I do turkey wings, I lock the door. I don't want nobody coming in my house when I'm cooking turkey wings because I'm putting them up. I'm cooking for that.
Do you stuff your turkey wings?
Do I what?
Stuff them, you know, like a roast?
I stuff them just like a roast. I call that pique. I pique my turkey wings. I put garlic.
Oh, okay, pique.
I put my garlic slices in
there.
That's
right.
I put my salt and pepper down in them holes, and then I always put a little bitty thin slice of jalapeno pepper down there to give me a little spice, and then I brown them
wings. Well, you know what? I think you cook just as well as I do.
You see that? And, baby, let me tell you what else I do. When I go to cook my wings down, I brown them first in a mixture. Now, you listen to this. A mixture of pork lard and bacon fat. I put that smoked bacon fat, and I brown them good in that, and I dump that out. Then I make my roux and my gravy from regular oil. But that meat got that good bacon fat, pork lard. That's what I brown them in. You ain't never tasted. Well, you tasted turkey.
Well, you know what? You old school, because you know what? I do the same thing, but I put mine in the oven.
Yeah, well, that's what I do too. After I put,
after
I put the gravy on them, and I put them in a I put them in a 375 degree oven, covered, and I cook them 1.5 to 2 hours.
That's right. Well, you know what? That's one of my biggest selling them turkey wings. I can't cook enough turkey wings. Now, they're not much on the legs, but they love the wings.
Now, let me ask you, what day of the week you got turkey wing? Thursday?
Mm-mm, every Tuesday.
Michelle, we got to get the menu because we going down there. Baby, you're going to see me next week.
All right.
You're going to see me.
Every Tuesday, I have the smothered liver, Michelle, the fried pork chop, the turkey wing, the meatloaf, the white beans, mustard greens, and guess what? My candy yams come from scratch.
Oh!
I peel so many crates of potatoes during the summer. You know, in the summer here, and I take them and I put them in the freezer. I vacuum seal. I don't buy candy yams at the store.
Well, okay? Baby, that, look, you are what we call in the food business, what people are going to understand, you call a dying art. Nobody cooked from scratch like that. Tell me about your...
We didn't get to Thursday and Friday.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Thursday
that's what I'm saying. I want to know.
Okay. Well, here's my Thursday menu. We have beef tip in the gravy.
Oh, Lord, you know that got to be good.
Yeah, fried chicken, southern fried chicken. Oh, they love it. Special people come just on Thursday for my fried chicken because that's the only day I fried chicken. And I have barbecue pork ribs.
Mm. Oh, them
you can get the rice and gravy or rice dressing.
Them little country ribs. I can see them now on the bone.
And red beans and smothered cabbage.
Now jump to Friday, baby. What you got on Friday?
Okay, let's hurry. Okay. Friday, we have shrimp stew. We have shrimp fettuccine. We have a seafood etouffee. Mm. And we have fried fish.
Lord, she got all the good fried
dishes. Chicken stew, corn, green beans, and sweet peas. Potato salad, green salad.
Now, baby, you open on the weekend? You open on Saturday?
No, I'm closed on weekend.
You close Saturday and Sunday, so Michelle.
Well, wait, she's got to put up all those yams and okra.
Now, what's your hours of operation over there, Brenda?
From 7 to 3, 5 days a week.
7 to 3. And where are you exactly located at?
409 West Persian. You ever been, you familiar with New Iberia?
Oh, yeah, girl. I go to New Iberia all the time.
I'm a block from the courthouse.
Okay, so you're not that far from Shatters on the Tash.
Well, the Shatter on the Tash is on Main Street.
That's right. That's on Main Street.
That's right. You cross over St. Peter. After you cross over, because you know how St. Peter and Main run a one way.
That's right.
Then you could come down Iberia Street or Week Street. You make a right turn, and then you come about maybe 2 or 3 blocks to your left. You go see a big neon sign say Brenda Steiner. Brenda Steiner and take out.
Well, you know I know where you at. I'm just want to make sure.
All right.
So, the way I do, I get off on the Cade exit and I drive straight on in from Cade. I pass in front of Bruce Foods and I come right on in to New Iberia that way. But most people take the interstate. Now, baby, let me ask you something. I know with that kind of food, you get a lot of tourists coming in there. Where are they coming from? Where are these people coming
from? All over. From Spain, Italy, Canada. Sometimes I can't even understand what they're saying. I tell them, you know, I just give them samples so they could taste. Because, you know, a lot of them don't know what turkey neck or pork bone or, you know, they know seafood, but any other food, they don't know about it. So you have to give them samples so they could taste and then tell you, oh, I love this. One thing they love is gravy. They love my gravy.
Oh, yeah. Well, you got that good country gravy.
Old country gravy, they love it.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the good thing, though, those people are going back to Spain. They're going back to Germany. They're going back to Italy. They're going back to Japan, England, France. And those people are saying they found a place that they ain't never ate food like that in their life, I bet, when they taste that.
They sure do.
Now, what about, I know you done had a lot of dignitaries in there, other than me I'm talking about.
You know who's my favorite dignitary?
Who's that, babe?
Tommy Lee Jones.
He come in there a lot?
Well, when he was making this movie down here.
Yeah, I remember.
You know, he lived in San Antonio.
Yeah.
Now, let me tell you a little secret. When he was down here, he lived in San Antonio. He have a ranch. And the whole while he was here, he was eating from Brenda Steiner. So when he got ready to leave, he asked me, he said, "Miss Brenda, you think you could come cook for me?" He was having a function at his house. So I told him I was going to go. Then at the same time, that was in 2005, my son was opening up his restaurant. So every weekend I was driving to Dallas getting them situated. A week or two, I told Tommy, I said, look, I can't come cook for y'all now, but I will come as soon as I get a chance. Now, I done got everything squared away. I'm going to cook for him. I'm waiting for him to call because I sent him word to tell him I'm ready to go cook for him.
That's good. I remember when they were making the movie because I did a big dinner at a camp right down there. Michelle, who's the fellow with the big game animals? We did the television show. Yeah, you're right. He wrote the book on wild game. He had that big camp right down there. I forget his name. First, we were right down from you because I'd pass in front of your place. I went feed them there. All the cast came to eat, and they invited me to come over there and do the big dinner, and I did it, and they were talking about you then. I said, I know exactly who you're talking about. She's a good friend of mine. But they were talking about you that night.
That was the best celebrity. Him and his wife, his well, you see, and another thing, his producer and his writer was from overseas.
That's
his
right.
Cook
I
was
remember,
from overseas.
I remember
so
that. I remember
that helped my business too. By me showing him so much love, it helped my business.
I know you did. Now let me ask you something. What keeps you in business? A lot of people say the restaurant business is a hard, hard business.
Well, let me tell you something, John. Remember, my mother told me when I was cooking out of my house.
Right.
I first started selling lunches to Martin Salt. I was selling it Monday, only Monday. Then they asked me to come on Wednesday. Then they asked me to come on Friday. Okay, word got out. So then I started going to Martin Mill.
Right.
I had two shifts, one for 11 and one 6 in the evening at dinner. They reported me to the Board of Health because you have to be licensed. You can't cook out of your house and sell food. So anyhow, after they started reporting me to the Board of Health, I told my mother, I said, Mama, I said, I think I want to open me a little restaurant. The same little spot where I'm at now. She said, Brenda, let me tell you something. You know, I'm old people here. She said, if you're going in it for the love of the money, you're going to have a short haul. But if you're going in it for the love of the food, you're going to have a long haul. I've been here 23 years. I'm going to leave you with that. It's the love I put in it. A lot of restaurants didn't open up and close down, but guess what? Miss Brenda's still rolling. You know why? The love I put in my food.
Well, you know what? That's exactly what it takes, and it shows. And look, let me tell you what. There's nobody listening to this show today that didn't learn a good lesson about something. Love of parents. Understanding hard work. Stickability, sticking with it during the hard times, sharing. To hear you say you drove to Dallas to set your son up in business, being a part of the community, but at the end of the day, being passionate about what you do, baby. Brenda, we love you to death, baby, and I promise you.
And I love y'all too, and thank y'all so much.
Thank you, baby. I'm gonna see you in the next couple weeks, y'all. We're gonna be back in a minute.
So I'll be down. The falls somewhere in this world, flowers grow. Baby, when I hear you loving, calling me, I want to tell you about.
Hello, I'm Georges Collinet. Join me this week for the immortal 1970s. Fantastic artists you might not know yet. Ebo Taylor, Sorry Bamba, Ernesto JJ, and others. That's next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi, this is Bill Bowens from The Dirty Rice Show, inviting you to join either Mr. Lee Klein, Peter, or myself every Saturday night from 8:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. for Dirty Rice right here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, public radio for Acadiana.
Greetings.
Move to KRVS every Sunday night for 2 hours of hardcore classic Rasta reggae radio right here on Jamon. Jamon, Sunday nights 9 to 11 p.m., Saturday mornings 1 to 3 here on KRVS, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Everybody, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. Michelle, that big game hunter in New Iberia was Perry Segura.
That is exactly right.
Perry Segura. He had all these big animals, and I did that big
dinner. He's a great guy.
Yeah, he was, and Brendan knew that I had been doing a dinner over at Perry Segura's camp over there. Anyway, what's going on, y'all? I want to thank Brenda. And by the way, y'all, all of Brenda's diner information will be on our website, www.jfalls.com. You won't have to worry about anything. You can find Brenda, and you want to find Brenda. So all of our information will be there. Slama, what about our Facebook page?
Yeah, we want to let everybody know. All of our stovehounds know already, but if you're not quite with it yet, if you're just driving along and you hear us for the first time, you want to continue the conversation, as we say, John, go to our Facebook page, you know, because everybody uses Facebook, but we have our public forum up there on Stirring It Up Radio. That's facebook.com/stirring without a G, It Up Radio. And so,
well, I mean, we've got so much going on right now. Fact is, I'm going to load up. We did a test. You know the big smokehouse competition we have going on with old Smokey at White Oak. Well, y'all, for about the last month and a half or 2 months, we've been talking about the resurrection of old Smokey, which was a two-hole outhouse on Cabanossi Plantation that was totally restored, Michelle. Oh, I don't know. I dragged it out of the swamps of Louisiana about 15 years ago and protected it and put it off to the side at White Oak Plantation. It was falling apart again and almost at a point of people saying, why don't you just tear that thing down? I said, ooh, no. So this year, I finally got all my team together and we resurrected Old Smokey, got it together and turned it into the most modern, up-to-date, computerized, as well as hot wood-fired smokehouse. And we're challenging our stovehounds to come up with a recipe to be the first cooks to be invited to smoke their favorite recipe, their winning recipe that we choose in Old Smokey, which is now, and I'm happy to say that it's finished, and I did my first test of all of the smoke, all of the tests with 150 pounds of andouille and 100 pounds of smoked sausage just a couple days ago. Came out beautiful. Oh, yeah. And of course, I can either hot fire or I can go ahead and set it by thermostat and get it moving.
So where's the platter of...
Got it right in your icebox right there, right in your refrigerator, right in the office.
So
right
we can get into that and taste it?
I got a bag for you to take home.
Woo! Okay. Well, that I'm talking.
Anyway, so the house is ready, and as soon as we get our stovehound responding, maybe they want to do a suckling pig, maybe they want to do a porchetta, maybe they want to do pork rolls, maybe they want to do sausage. I don't know.
Maybe they want to do fish.
Maybe they want to do smoked fish, whatever they feel like doing. Whoever we choose, we want to put it together and have a few stovehounds come out, and whoever offered their recipes.
Right.
Can come
so
out
that's
and,
the big
and yeah,
thing.
We're going to keep it a secret, right?
If they give us a recipe, we won't tell anybody.
Oh, no, we won't tell anybody. It'll be a secret recipe,
but
we'll choose the winner. That way we can put up some shots. But I'm going to load up some pictures today of Old Smokey smoking the first batch of tests.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't considered the first cook. This is the first test.
Right, because you had to make sure everything
was... Well, I had to make sure things work. I didn't want people to bring that.
Copacetic.
Yeah, no, exactly. So anyway, y'all, that's it. Michelle, what about... What about books on the subject? Each week on Starring It Up, Michelle brings books on the subject or the topic of the show, and now we're talking about Blue Plate specials. So did you find anything on that subject?
Well, this is what I found. There's one book that's, you know, truly great appeal for history buffs, but it's a good read, too, called Appetite for America, Fred Harvey and the Business of Civilizing the Wild West, One Meal at a Time. This book was written by Stephen Fried. And it's the story of Fred Harvey. We were talking about him earlier, the entrepreneur whose family business is really credited with starting America's service industry. The story's kind of intertwined with the history of the United States expansion, their characters like Bat Masterson and Billy the Kids and the great days of the railroad. And it's the story of Fred Harvey, who worked his way up from dishwasher to entrepreneur. His Harvey House establishments were kind of the Marriotts and the Howard Johnsons of their day. It's a great story of American history, great success story as well. So I highly recommend that one. The next book I want to recommend is Southern Living Off the Eaten Path. Not beaten. Southern Living Off the Eaten Path. Favorite Southern Dives and 150 Recipes That Made Them Famous. This was written by Morgan Murphy, former Southern Living Magazine travel and food editor. Of course, he knows his way to all the best back road eating spots, and so he's able to take us inside to enjoy the true flavor of the region. He even managed to pry a few of those secret recipes from the hands of the cook so that we can try them at home.
Oh, wow.
The book includes recollections from owners, from patrons, you know, just for a little added flavor. But they're both exceptional books, I think great additions to your culture and culinary library. Appetite for America, that's the Fred Harvey story, and then Southern Living Off the Eaten Path.
And all of those, y'all, all of the information you just heard, as well as our recipes, as well as all information on the show and podcast, can, of course, be accessed through www.jfalls.com, the radio show. If you click on that, you can go to the site, and of course, everything's right there for you, including all of the archive shows as well. And Slama, we do want to encourage all of our listeners to, again, chat with us on Facebook. Let us know what you're interested in. Let us know, especially, you see, we're talking about diners today. If you go to any of these diners, let people know you heard about it on the show, and let us know your experience there. That way we can kind of relive through the next couple of months your journeys through some of these places as well, because we know what we're going to get when we go there. We're going to create a commotion because we're going to be yelling and screaming when we walk in. We're going to be hugging, and we're going to go into the kitchen and just start tasting everything. But when people walk in and just sit down and have a meal, we'd like to know their experience. You know,
yes.
That'd be really nice. And we want to know of those places that you found that we know nothing about. We'd love to know those as well. Now, Slama, we have a couple of recipes today. I want to do the Creole pork roast casserole. And then where I came from, it was river shrimp, okra, and tomatoes.
I'm going to tell you, that's one of those recipes. I have to say, I got distracted because I was looking at the recipe.
What, the
smothered okra with shrimp and tomatoes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think we ought to do that one. What you think? Because since she talked about it, she said she put up how many bushels of okra, she said?
What did she say?
She said she had a freezer just for okra.
Freezer just for
yeah.
okra.
We're going to do that.
Okay, we'll start there.
Yeah, let's start there. Smothered okra with shrimp and tomatoes, y'all. And by the way, the recipe will be on the website. As I say, go to jfalls.com. You'll find everything there. Okra, or gumbo, as it was called, was brought to Louisiana by the Africans in the early 1700s, possibly even as early as the late 1600s. The vegetable was quickly adopted, no need to say, to use in many dishes, and especially the great soup that it gave its name to, our gumbo. In fact, the name Ken Gumbo or Guimi Gumbo comes from the Senegal in the Congolese language for the vegetable okra. And gumbo, the soup, got its name from that vegetable. Now, I have to say, not all gumbos have okra in it, but shrimp gumbos, seafood gumbos normally do have okra. Once you get into the heavier game gumbos or the chicken and sausage gumbo, you're not going to find okra normally in that.
This is kind of summer gumbo, okra and shrimp.
Yeah, that's right. The lighter gumbo, because okra is also
my favorite.
Okra is also a thickening agent.
With crab stock.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I mean, how would you make it without crab stock? Yeah. Anyway, smothered okra and tomatoes can be eaten alone as a vegetable made into a side dish by adding a little crab meat and shrimp, as we're going to do here. And many Louisianians, as Brenda said, make this dish in large batches because it's easier to make one time and then go ahead and put it in the freezer in little bags, because then when you're ready to make a gumbo or something, you can dump it right in.
See, this is why I'm interested in this recipe, because I have some of those little bags of smothered okra in my freezer that my mama gave me.
Oh, she, you do? Mm-hmm. Well, you probably ought to give them to loving hands like me to make sure that... You know what I mean? That the gumbo is proper.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean, huh? Well, anyway, y'all, by the way, you can microwave the okra, too, which I'll give you a great recipe for in a minute. It's always important to have tomato in with your fresh okra, because okra is very, well, you know, the protein that's extruded from okra kind of gives it what most people refer to as that slimy protein from the okra when you're cutting it. And when you start to cook it and you put heat to the okra, it's going to get very, very slimy in the pot. And that's not the right word, but that's kind of what people would relate it to.
Like. Yeah.
And then when you put tomato in it, the acid from the tomato instantly dissolves that sliminess. It instantly, that's why okra always has tomatoes in it, because, or should always have tomatoes in. If you're going to love your okra, chances are pretty good it's going to be okra and tomatoes, because it's going to be cooked with that. So, y'all, what we're going to do, it's important to select only young and tender okra. You see what she said? She said she does it in the summer when the okra is good, and she gets it fresh out of the field. She does not buy it in the store, because in the store it could be woodsy or it might be a little old if you don't know what you're getting. So make sure you ask the produce manager of the store, how fresh is the okra, or how tender is the okra? I asked for a sample of it so you could cut it, because you never know. I mean, and you don't want to buy okra that's tough and old. So select only young, tender okra for smothering. As the season progresses, as I said, okra hardens and is no longer prime for smothering. In a 4-quart saucepan, I'm going to heat a little oil, about a quarter cup of vegetable oil, over medium-high heat. I'm going to take the okra, let's say 2 quarts of fresh sliced okra, and I'll slice it a little bit thicker than, let's say, a nickel. If you take a nickel and you see how thick that nickel is.
Oh, you slice about, it thin.
Yeah, slice it very thin. I do not cut thick okra a half inch thick. Mine is very thin. Then I'm going to saute the okra along with those 2 quarts of sliced okra with 1 cup of diced onions, 1 cup of diced celery, 1/2 cup of diced bell pepper, and 1/4 cup of minced garlic. And I'm going to saute all of that around, stirring constantly for about 30 minutes. And at that point, I'm going to add, now this is the important step right here, 3 cups of finely diced tomatoes. Mm-hmm. That's where the acid's going to come from to start to break the okra down. And 1/2 cup of hot water.
Now, why the hot water?
Well, because the hot water is going to kind of break up. It's going to add liquid to the pot. It's going to steam out. It's going to soften the okra, and it's going to create the steam necessary to break the tomatoes down. Now, the minute you add those tomatoes and that 1/2 cup of hot water to it and stir that around good and it starts to simmer again, you're going to see all of that, like I said, that sliminess of the okra disappear. It's just going to start to really simmer. I'm going to cook that for 45 minutes, stirring occasionally, and let it all cook down, or as we say, smother. That's where the word étouffer comes from. The word étouffer means to smother. So 45 minutes, then I'm going to add my shrimp to it. I'm going to add 1 pound of 70-90 shrimp, peeled and deveined. Season it to taste with salt, pepper, and of course a little granulated garlic, and let the shrimp cook for about 15 to 20 minutes. I'm going to add all that great shrimp stock and juice from the fresh shrimp into the okra and tomatoes. And at that point, you can do a couple of things, Michelle. You can put it into a little casserole dish with breadcrumbs as a side dish.
Mm-hmm.
To any, especially seafood. I mean, you know, you're doing a good baked fish or something, a little okra is really nice.
Yeah.
Or you can bag it up, as we just said, into little 2-cup portions in plastic bags and freeze it. It becomes an absolutely wonderful ingredient for gumbos. I'll tell you, one of the things that I really like, too, is okra and tomato pie.
Really? Pie?
A pie shell. Mix a little breadcrumbs, season Italian in it, put it into a pie shell, little breadcrumbs on top, a couple pats of butter, throw it into a 350-degree oven and brown that thing and let it cool, and then you slice it like a quiche. It's like a vegetable quiche. And the fact that it's got that great shrimp in it, my problem with cooking this dish, smothered okra and tomatoes with shrimp, is that after that last 45-minute cook where I'm stirring it around, I want to start eating.
I know, because I love that. But you're so close to a gumbo, just, you know.
That's why you make plenty of it. Now, y'all, one other quick tip. If you want to smother that okra instead of this 45 minutes stirring occasionally in the bottom of a pot, you combine all ingredients, the okra, the tomatoes, the shrimp, the onion, celery, bell pepper, all of those things, you combine them, you stir them really well, and you put it in a large glass bowl. You cover it with clear wrap, tightly with clear wrap. Punch two little steam holes in it. You put it in the microwave on high for 5 minutes. When the bell goes off, you take it out. You careful. Watch that steam. You take the cover off, and you stir it really well. Put that clear wrap back on. Back into the microwave 5 minutes. You're going to do that. You know, normally 20 minutes will do it, but depending on the wattage of your microwave, you might. In other words, you're just looking to smother it all the way down into the bottom of the bowl. A lot of people will do that for 20 minutes and then put it into a cast iron pot and then cook it in the pot to get that caramelized flavor to it. But you don't have to stir it all that time in the microwave. It cooks 5 minutes, you stir it, you cook 5 minutes, you stir it. You're only stirring it four times.
I think maybe you should cook this for lunch today.
Well, I don't have any okra. Why don't we just get in our car and go see Brenda?
That would be a better idea.
Hey, you want to know where to find Brenda. That's the main thing we're talking about today. And this is a great recipe. We'll put a couple of them on the website. Y'all, we can't tell you how much we thank you for being with us at the kitchen table today. We'll see you next week. Michelle, let's go find some okra.
Okay.